My name is Hannes Park. I'm a professor at the University of Georgia, professor of international affairs, and I'm also the director of the Center for the Study of Global Issues at that university. And I have written books on North Korea, most recent one being North Korea, the Politics of Unconventional Wisdom, based on my numerous trips to that country in recent years.
Currently in the media, we're seeing coverage of North Korea tied into the possibility that North Korea has nuclear weapons. Yet the coverage seems to be totally void of any context of the history of Korea. I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of what is missing from all of this.
Right. In the context of the controversy surrounding North Korea's nuclear program, we have to have some knowledge about the history. Where does this come from? Many people are puzzled by the fact that a country as poor, as desperate, as isolated internationally, and still has such military preparedness. I believe North Korea has nuclear bombs and has a full ability to produce without importing any parts or relying on foreign technology. So you have to, in history, you have to think about Japanese occupation period, which ran from 1910 to 1945. Kim Il-sung was allegedly, I think there's some truth to that as well, was a national leader. And he was a guerrilla warfare leader in China, Manchuria, during that period when he was quite young. I read his autobiography. Repeatedly, he shows his amazement at the might of nuclear bomb that made Japan, the Japanese Empire, surrender instantly. So he developed intense desire to develop that very weapon so that no one can interfere with North Korea. So that intense desire was carried on to his policy when he assumed the power in 1948. For, you know, he died in 1974, so it's a long time span. Consistently and persistently, he pursued a nuclear program with the Chinese help, with the Soviets' help. So they did develop the indigenous capability. So it's very difficult to curtail North Korean nuclear program with external pressure. With that background, then we have to assess how can we control North Korean nuclear program. Since it's indigenous, it's very difficult to control it by way of blocking technology or material being imported to North Korea. It's going to be very difficult and very difficult to monitor the operation or activities on a nuclear program. So with this, then we must realize that how come a country such poor and isolated is capable of developing these weapons and as well as military preparedness? And I think you have to put yourselves in North Korean shoes. They are really up against the wall. We're talking about an ordinary, North Korea is ordinary system in many respects, a system that is against the wall and that has lost all allies. The Soviet Union disappeared. China changed. Eastern European allies all gone. And whereas in South Korea, the security alliance, the United States, Japan, and South Korean alliance intact, even strengthened with ever-sophisticated weapons presence in South Korea, coupled with periodic joint military exercises. So they have developed intense fear, and they develop a sort of mentality or mindset that might be called a siege mentality. So they are very fearful of their existence. They think they are threatened and they can be attacked anytime. In fact, if you look objectively, their fear is very justified, psychologically as well as physically. And that is the American administration under George W. Bush presidency now defined North Korea as one of the axis of evil countries. right now Iraq is gone, destroyed. I mean, the United States destroyed Iraq, and Iran and North Korea may be next targets. So North Korea is very mindful of that. I personally visited North Korea perhaps about 35, 37 times during the mostly period of the 90s. Last time I visited was less than 2 months ago. It was during the Iraqi operation and toward the end of the Iraqi operation. So North Korea saw the demise of Iraq as a result of American military deployment. North Korea had a reason to be fearful of the United States military policy. So given that, in order to survive, you know, in the part of the regime, they're not going to give up a weapons program. The question how to curtail North Korea's weapons program. You have to put yourself in North Korean's shoes. What might be enough incentive for North Koreans to consider reducing or even doing away with the weapons program? It's going to be very difficult unless you assume that North Korean leadership will do it despite the possibility of being collapsed. Then they might do it. But that assumption is a very, very shaky assumption. No regime would undercut its own existence. So it's going to be very difficult how you resolve it. I guess the Bush administration is contemplating on applying military pressure. At this time, economic and other diplomatic pressures. I personally think that economic sanction, blockade, all these sanctions short of the military are not going to work because they have been sanctioned to the bone for the last 5-10 years, resulting in part because of that mass starvations and mass death. If a country will collapse because of economic difficulties, North Korea would have collapsed many times over. A country doesn't collapse because of economic difficulty. It does collapse if it has a legitimacy crisis for the regime. But North Korea doesn't. The leadership enjoys full legitimacy from the people. So, in fact, we don't have a whole lot of pressure instruments. That is, with what can we pressure anymore? They're not trading with other governments. They're not importing any spare parts. What can we do, you know? And we're talking about blocking their drug imports or dealings and counterfeit and missiles export and all that. That's much more symbolic. We don't know the volume of it, and I think the volume is very minimal in terms of the amount of money generated from that, and that sanction is not going to be influential. It's not going to press North Korea enough. And of course, the Bush administration is contemplating on attacking using surgical military strikes. That is never going to work because North Korea is no Iraq. It has a very formidable military preparedness. And North Korea's military buildup was made or has been made at the expense of enormous amount of sacrifices in the area of economic development, the human sufferings, and so on. In other words, their weapons are much more precious, or at least regarded precious, than we think weapons in other countries. So they're not going to see, in my opinion, sit down and just witness the dismantling of their weapons by surgical strikes from the United States. They will have every incentive and motivation to use those weapons before too late. Even after a few surgical strikes, they will have enough retaliatory capability. So, you know, given the proximity of Seoul, South Korean capital, with 12 million people living in South Korea, that's within 35 miles range, in any kind of all-out war or confrontation would mean millions, literally 4-5 million South Koreans killed. And of course, of 37 some American troops So the Bush administration should be thinking about these ramifications, implications of such an option, military strike. So that leaves only one option. You have to resolve this issue peacefully. Or else the United States and other parties should be prepared to accept nuclear North Korea. So either allow or accept nuclear North Korea or peaceful resolution.
Now, what would be the steps towards peaceful resolution?
I think what North Korea wants is very clear. People are saying that they cannot understand North Korean behavior, and I do understand North Korean behavior. It's not very hard to understand. They want security assurance, and very specifically, they want to conclude the Korean War. And with all reverence for critics out there, and I agree with North Korea, there's no reason to prolong this armistice agreement or truce, temporary ceasefire situation beyond 50 years. There's absolutely no reason. There's no Cold War anymore. There's no military confrontation anymore here in this part of the world. So because of the presence of the Korean War still lingering on, you have a military buildup in both sides, either side of the DMZ. And I think it's a totally waste of resources and unnecessary. So we have to terminate that. That termination process involves only the United States and North Korea because they're the ones who signed on the armistice agreement. And that's what North Korea wants initially. And then they want more regional security regime or peace regime. And I think that's a proper thing to do. However, the United States wants North Korea to give up weapons of mass destruction unconditionally. I think that demand from the non-proliferation treaty, from the IAEA point of view, is justified. However, North Korea and the United States relationship is not a normal relationship. They're adversarial, they're enemy relationship. Now, actually, we're looking beyond looking at North Korea from American point of view, beyond the border, the enemy, and telling them, you give up your weapons program. While we have all kinds of arsenals of weapons, they're not going to be persuaded by that. And if they say, yes, we'll give up, I mean, they may say, for political, economic reasons in international politics and so forth, but to believe that they're telling the truth is utterly naive. So you've got to alleviate this armistice agreement situation, replace it with some sort of peace arrangement first. The fact is, America is a powerful country, and we have some underlying premise difference. Americans are not saying exactly this, but their mindset is that, hey, we're different, we're stronger, we're the richest country in the world. We're not on the same footing. The North Koreans, you have to tell what we want you to. Then you'll have all these lollipops and all these economic aid and so forth. If you're going to survive, you better be nice to us. And that's the American mentality. And North Koreans are uncomfortable with that. They like to see, you know, yeah, we may be poor and all that, but we are a sovereign state. So, you know, when it comes to defending the country and insisting on national sovereignty, we're equal. So you have that underlying premise difference. Americans are not going to give North Korea what they want, that is dismantling the weapons program, but insist on giving up the weapons program first. I guess eventually, I think both sides should compromise, especially the United States. I think eventually what is likely to happen is a multilateral situation to give face-saving to the United States. Within multilateral situation, there will be enough opportunities for North Korea and the United States to sit down, have caucus meetings, So substantively and actually, de facto to bilateral meeting can be incorporated. That is to satisfy, say, North Korean side. So in that way, we have to find some workable solution. Outside that, you know, there's no way that we can allow military confrontation. No way we can induce North Korean collapse. And a collapsed North Korea will be a nightmare in the region. You know, millions, literally millions of people will come out into China. That's not only economic burden, but more importantly, it's a diplomatic nightmare. And the South Korean economy and society are not going to be prepared for the absorption of North Koreans. You know, the German unification, as you see, seemingly successful, but still, you know, for more than a decade, they are experiencing some maladjustment. Still, we are witnessing that. But if you compare German unification situation with the possible inter-Korea situation here, very clearly, West Germany was relatively far more stable and economically secure, and in fact, physically larger than East Germany was in comparison with of South Korea and North Korea. So South Korea cannot bear the burden of absorbing North Korea economically, socially, political instability, unrest-wise. So collapsed North Korea is no interest for any party around this area.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to find in the armistice between North Korea and the United States that South Korea wasn't involved in that. Can you give us a sense of why South Korea isn't involved with that, and then tell us about how the concept of reconciliation is important to finding a solution to all of this?
When the Korean War was waged, it was between North Korea and the United Nations. The United Nations headed by the United States. And South Korea was not the principal party adversarial to North Korea. Legally, especially legally, and also in terms of military command power, it was the United Nations and the United States on behalf of the United Nations. And that was the history. Unfortunately, that is the legal side of it. A de facto situation, certainly South Korea cannot be left out in any kind of peace-building process. So what I'm suggesting is the legal inadequacies or legal matters should be taken care of first, changing the armistice agreement into some sort of peace arrangement. It's not a big deal. It's a signing on a new piece of paper. The situation will not change. To change the situation, we must involve South Korea very significantly. So we have to think about in this dual stage or two-stage terms. So in South Korea, unlike previous governments, this Roh-Moo-Hyun government is prepared to accept that. You know, you guys, you deal with the legal problem of armistice agreement. And then we all, you know, hop on the peace train and let's work out something. That's a South Korean position, and I think it's a very good position.
It seems that currently the newly elected president of South Korea is under a lot of pressure from the U.S. that is affecting his popularity here in South Korea. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Roh Moo-hyun was elected by and large because of more liberal segments of population, namely the youthful voters, and much more nationalistic, much more, I guess, devoid of Cold War mentality, progressive, much more favorable perception of North Korea, even North Korea leader Kim Jong-il. Those young people elected him, and President Roh is one who did not have a whole lot of experience in diplomacy, if any, really, or knowledge about international affairs and so forth. But he became president with a conviction that we must be self-reliant. We must be more nationalistic, self-assertive. And he did the first few months, did that. But the reality was the United States pressure, the influence of the United States, especially in the economic domain, was so decisive that he could not insist on doing independent or self-reliance kind of foreign policy toward the United States. So what he did when he visited Washington for that summit meeting with President Bush, he actually gave in. He asked President Bush not to withdraw U.S. troops from South Korea, reaffirmed the strong alliance, and basically supported the Bush administration's policy toward North Korea. And that made the voters back home extremely angry. And also, that may have pleased the more conservative people in South Korea, but the conservative people are not going to vote for him. There are different kinds of people. So he is going through tremendous difficulties right now. I might add that he was wrong. He should have gone to the meeting with President Bush. It should have told him that I was elected president, and just like you are, my primary obligation is to protect my people's lives and their property. And I'll do everything. That's what I'm for. I'm mandated by that, my voters. I owe them. And any kind of war confrontation on the peninsula will mean that millions of people will be killed. I cannot tolerate that. And the possibility of war can be by the initiation of the United States, most likely by the initiative of North Korea, but that's unlikely. So if any language of using military or surgical strike or any kind of military exercise will certainly mean retaliation from North Korea, and North Korea is militarily strong enough to do something, you know, unbearable damage to my country, that is President Roh's country, and therefore I cannot go along with your military option. You have to understand. Please understand, I cannot condone that. And if you have to go military, I have to distance myself from you. He should have said that, and I think would have been very persuasive argument, and he would have a lot of support even from American legislators if he did that, because that's a commonsensically so persuasive argument. I don't think he did. So, you know, his presidency is still very young, and I think he should try to establish an identity for his foreign policy orientations. And I think it's still too early to judge. The problem is he cannot afford a trial era situation. This is not apprenticeship. This is a real thing. He is the president. So I really hope that he and his brains, the think tank people, will put their heads together and come up with a very rational and persuasive policy, which may or may not, most likely, may not be consistent with George W. Bush's policy toward North Korea to a large extent. But that's what, you know, post-war, Cold War era calls for. Every country will become more self-reliant, more insistent on national interest, because the world is not going to be ordered by the domination that is hierarchical order. It will be more mutually interdependent situation. I think South Korean president must be mindful of that, must be more insistent on assuming initiatives in handling the Korean crisis.
How do you see the current talk in the U.S. about pulling back troops away from the border between North and South? Do you see that as a destabilizing move?
And I think that move, the real intent, I don't know. Any speculation may be plausible, but the perception is that the Bush administration, especially the Defense Department, Rumsfeld and his people, may be thinking military strike seriously, maybe removing potential targets in the form of American military personnel away from the harm's way. And that very thought, perception, is very dangerous, because North Koreans, I'm certain, that are led to believe that. This is a part of their preparation to attack us. You know, North Korea is no Iraq or Afghanistan. The United States, months ago, they assembled more than 200,000 soldiers there in Middle East, you know, surrounding Iraq. And then all kinds of bluffings and so forth, you know. If you did that, the North Korea will preemptive strike. Because if they are destroyed, they lose most of the capability to counterattack. So in this case, the troop movements from the front line back, and perhaps some partial removal of ground troops from South Korea, that would be interpreted by North Koreans as a part of war preparation. And I think it's very dangerous. That can trigger North Korean action anytime.
What would be, if you could deliver a message to citizens in the U.S., what would be your recommendation for what they should convey to their leaders in Congress?
I think the United States, the tragic fact is that North Korea is not known to the American public. And what they know is largely distorted and wrong. I've been an American citizen for 40 years. I know America fairly well. And I know North Korea and South Korea very well. The American public has the right to know world affairs, in this case North Korea. And I think it's basically journalists and reporters and people who are involved in opinion making in the United States. It's their obligation to try to go into North Korea, bring them out, and read the material, and directly, indirectly, try to ascertain as closely factual information as possible, and tell the American people, this is North Korea. North Korean Kim Jong-il, I don't have a love affair with him, but he's no Saddam Hussein. He hasn't mass murdered his own people. I mean, Saddam Hussein too, I don't know for a fact, but that's what we have been told by U.S. establishment. But what we know, what we are told about Saddam Hussein is correct, then Kim Jong-il, I can tell you, is no Saddam Hussein. So he's respected by his people, and in North Korea there is no power conflict, there has never been. After Kim Jong-il, there will be no potential individual or groups to succeed him. So President Bush is talking about regime change. Once labeled North Korea as an axis of evil, as an evil country, then the only fate in biblical sense, in Christianity, the only fate for evil is death. So in fact, Kim Il-sung is very dangerous in this sense. George W. Bush is not ruling out regime change at all. And I think he's more interested in regime change, uprooting some evils, than doing something with the weapons of mass destruction. Clearly it was seen. You know, American troops didn't go in to hunt for weapons of mass destruction. If they did, they would have done it very convincingly, if Iraq had had the weapons. But went in there to depose, to destroy Saddam Hussein's regime, which it did. But in North Korean case, regime change is going to be close to impossibility. It's going to be very difficult to eliminate Kim Jong-il, and even more difficult to handle the aftermath. So the American government needs to have a whole new policy toward North Korea. The same jacket cannot fit there. So the formula that seemingly militarily successful toward Iraq and Afghanistan hey, who would be surprised by the fact that the United States military militarily, physically destroyed Iraq and Afghanistan? It's not a big deal. The battle was won by the United States, but the war is still being waged as we speak. So I like to see American policymakers, and more importantly, American public, to have a much bigger perspective. You know, we're out of the Cold War era. Once we define some people around the world, leaders, as evils, then there will be no dialogue. You know, I'm a Christian. I've been told by my mentors in that religious community, you don't deal with evils. You destroy evils. Don't touch, don't talk. So I think it's very unfortunate that the U.S. Leader defined some leaders in the world as evils. And he, coming from Southern Fundamental Baptist school or schooling, that's a very dangerous thing. And I really hope this axis of evil and dismantling and regime change, this syndrome will be short-lived. This is just a passing, like a summer rain. You know, I don't think this can be prolonged in international domain, and I hope, certainly hope not.